Facing a tough re-election, California Republicans looked to gin up some enthusiasm at their annual state party convention, but may have left more depressed than when they entered. This is Keys to the House, a new podcast from Capital Public Radio about the battleground congressional races and the themes that could determine the election. I'm your host, Ben Bradford. Indecision at the California Republican Party convention this month in San Diego could cost GOP congressional candidates. Activists showed up to endorse a candidate for governor, but left without unifying. Today, a bit different from our last episode, we're bringing in reporters who are covering the congressional races to get their takeaways. It's the first of our roundtable discussions. The senior writer of Politico's California Playbook, Carla Marinucci, attended the convention, as did Los Angeles Times political reporter Christine Maiduk. Hi, Carla. Hi, Christine.
Hey, good to be with you, Ben.
Hi.
So let's start with the mood of the convention. Did it feel different from previous ones? Maybe, Carla, you can answer that.
Ben, last year was just militant. It was celebratory. They were on an upswing there with Steve Bannon showing up right after the Trump victory. And this year, by contrast, what you saw is kind of low energy, low expectations.
You think that they left the convention less enthused than they began it?
Yeah, I think it was a downer for them to not get behind one gubernatorial candidate.
Tell us the story of what happened at the convention. What was the drama with the governor's race, and why does it matter?
Republicans going into the convention were hoping to get behind one gubernatorial candidate. It mattered to the Republican Party because that would have energized turnout for the governor's race and for House races. And the fight went on between the wealthy Republican John Cox, the businessman, and the populist assemblyman, the conservative Travis Allen.
The problem with this is that not only do Republicans then go into the primary with no indication from the California Republican Party about who to support, but in addition to that, if no Republican makes it into the November election, then there's a question of, like, can they draw as many voters out?
Exactly right. It aimed to energize voters. It would have energized their voters. It would have helped them with turnout, and it would have given the message that the party was behind one candidate, and they failed on those counts.
Yeah, and Christine, you wrote about how Republicans, you said that they were not really talking about this blue wave that could be coming at them. What was your experience there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, throughout the weekend, this is probably the most pressing concern for California Republicans. It's not a state politics issue. They are federal elections. But, you know, keeping these GOP-held House seats, you know, in terms of helping Republicans keep control of the House is one of the most important things facing California Republicans at this point. And it was mostly not talked about. The governor's race endorsement was talked about a lot. The gas tax repeal initiative effort was talked about a lot, as were sanctuary state policies. But we didn't really hear that much in terms of a central focus on House races, where they really need to keep these seats. They've got a number of endangered Republican incumbents. And that being said, there is something to be said for the fact that the convention was scheduled much later in the season this time. We're only about, you know, a little more than a month out from the June primary. So there was speculation that maybe a lot of the activists and people who, you know, candidates were actually back in their home districts campaigning because this is really go time for them. But still, there was just really a lack of energy and a lack of excitement around this convention particularly.
And Ben, I mean, I've got to say, I mean, Christine is absolutely right on when she says there was just no attention or barely any attention given to these House races. And that was the shocking thing about it, from the Republican leaders to, you know, displays there in the convention hall. This is job one for the Republicans as they're heading toward November. There was barely a mention of Nancy Pelosi, which tells you what kind of, enthusiasm or energy there was there. This is job one because if Democrats are successful in flipping the House, and Democrats say the road to flipping the House goes through California, particularly Orange County, particularly California's suburbs. Let's face it, if the Democrats flip the House, the drive for impeachment of President Trump is a lot more viable. There's a whole bunch of other issues that are a lot more viable for Democrats if they flip the House. And to hear almost no discussion of this was a little bit shocking, I think.
Clearly, there was at least a little bit. Congresswoman Mimi Walters mentioned it, for instance, and we'll play that bite for you.
I have never seen the left in Orange County specifically be this energized. And I think it's because, you know, it's a midterm election and their party is not in power.
And Christine, I think I saw the spokesperson for the California Republican Party push back at you on Twitter being like, yes, it is a major theme. I just wanted to make sure I get those kind of points in there and have you guys respond to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we did get some pushback on this, and there was probably mention in maybe each of the sessions something about House races, but I think that the assessment that it was not a central focus, that it was not overtly mentioned in a lot of venues at the convention is spot on. And Mimi Walters headlined a congressional-themed dinner on Friday night, and she did lay it out. She was one of the only people that really made this a central focus of her appearance at the convention.
The Democrats think there's no stopping them this time. They're not just coming for any one of us. They're coming for all of us.
It was not, you know, a entirely positive speech, that's for sure. So I would say that since January, especially with this wave of retirements nationwide, two of them coming in California, I think that the Republican Party in California is becoming more realistic about the odds they have that they're facing and what they're going to have to do to keep these seats in the fall.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, Carla, I mean, you mentioned the stakes here, right? I mean, on one hand, there are seven seats that Democrats are kind of targeting. I think that's kind of a stretch goal. But the Republicans only have 14 congressional seats. I mean, that would cut it in half. And then in addition to that, if Democrats win control, I mean, can you imagine the kind of investigations that we'll see into Trump?
Yeah, it was interesting. Democrats were watching what was going on at the Republican convention and tweeting up a storm. And I think it only fired the Democrats up more, watching from afar. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And I have to say that when you look at some of the reaction of what happened at this Republican convention, you have an editorial from the San Diego Union Tribune saying, why do the Republicans want to continue to be irrelevant in California based on what happened at the convention this weekend? You know, they've got to answer that question. And I think that the party is facing some real concerns about where they go from here in terms of basically attracting new people and firing up some of their key constituents. They were making gains on Latinos in California, but they've got real challenges on that front now. Millennials, another big challenge. We didn't see a lot at this convention from millennials there. So, women, another area. So, you know, at this point, we'll see how the California Republican Party fares. But, boy, it looks like it's going to be a real challenge for them as they go toward the June primary and November.
You know, and that's one of the things that we focused on in our first episode is kind of how we got here, right? This Republican, the party that once had Reagan and Nixon, sent them to the White House, and then this kind of decline, specifically looking at the party's relationship to immigrants starting in the 90s and this tone the party has taken. Clearly, we saw with President Trump, there's a lot of those kind of same themes emerged during his campaign. It fired up Republicans, but at the same time, it led to calls of, you know, racism and xenophobia, and has the ability to turn away these key demographics the Republican Party has not been able to bring in. So one of the things I just want to chat about with you guys is this, the focus that the party is having and the issues it's trying to concentrate on. I mean, you mentioned the gas tax on one hand. So this is Republicans wanting to go after Democrats for increasing the gas tax as part of this transportation overhaul they passed last year at the state legislature. But then on the other hand, it's increasingly about fighting the state's law extending sanctuary protections to undocumented immigrants across California. And granted, they can frame it as public safety or whatever else. But again, isn't this kind of steering into immigration again?
Yeah, I would say that it's definitely, while they can cast it as like a law and order and a public safety issue, you know, these are not, you know, just immigrants. These are criminal, you know, as they call them, criminal illegal aliens. And that's the rhetoric that surrounds that. But that being said, immigration as a whole comes as a very emotional issue for both sides. And I think that's the risk that Republicans run in kind of really hoping to motivate their base with this issue. They say that it's polling well in a lot of these districts, that opposing sanctuary state laws will get them support from, you know, maybe some conservative-minded nonpartisans as well. But that being said, you know, I spoke to Dan Schnur, who's, you know, a former Republican and a professor at USC, and he said this is the kind of issue that can also motivate Democrats to come out to the polls and oppose people who take positions on sanctuary state policy, because it's just one of these issues that, you know, when you go to these city council meetings and you have hundreds of people waiting to speak with signs and on both sides, I mean, the issue is emotional, and the rhetoric and the debate around it becomes about this idea of allowing, you know, criminals to stay versus separating families. I mean, it just all kind of gets intertwined.
And I think Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who's now been here in California twice talking about this law, the California Values Act, SB 54, his appearance this week, in which he announced basically a warning to families saying that families could be separated if they try to enter the country illegally, that has created tremendous blowback from Democrats, including Senator Feinstein and others who have really criticized this stance this morning. The question is, as Christine said, whether that's going to really fire up Democratic turnout more than Republican. We know this, that law, that, you know, the so-called sanctuary cities law has strong opposition among Republican voters in California. 9 out of 10, according to the polls, don't like this law. But the fact is, Californians in general, as we know from polls, are sympathetic to immigration and even undocumented immigrants, and believe they should be given a path to citizenship. So that's where the divide is going to be, and that's where the challenge is for the Republican Party to try to, you know, walk that tightrope, I guess.
I think what's interesting also about both of these issues, the sanctuary state policies as well as the repeal of the gas tax increase, really what California Republicans clearly are trying to do is cast these as, you know, Democratic one-party rule in California overreaching and just going too far for the general public and the electorate in California. And they're really just trying to point at this and say, you know, look at these Democratic wackadoodles and how far they want to go with these policies so far to the left. And I think it remains to be seen whether that conversation is going to work. But it's clearly a strategy that state Republicans are hoping to serve as a counterpoint, that while, you know, Republicans control the White House and Congress out in California, you know, it's all one party rule of all the levers of power for state government, and that is not a good thing.
And that was definitely how we saw State Party Chair Jim Brolte kind of try to get away from the focus on Trump.
You want to know why every word out of the Democrats' mouth is Donald Trump? Because they don't want the voters of this state focusing on what's happening here.
And I guess I wonder, I mean, like, you know, Carla, you had mentioned that last time this was Steve Bannon and Arizona Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who was fresh off his pardon from the president, were walking around. I think you called them rock stars at the last convention. Yeah. And I just wonder now, I mean, you know, Trump still fires up the base of Republicans. You look at how favorable he is with them. I think it's around 70%, but he's so unpopular with the rest of the state. I just feel like there's this tension within the party over how to handle that. How's the party dealing with this?
And that's true in the governor's race, too. I think Republicans this year showed kind of a conflicted view of their relationship with Trump. As you mentioned, Brulte was saying, you know, that's why Democrats keep mentioning him. They've broken the state. They don't want to fix it. But you had the leading gubernatorial candidate, John Cox, who has admitted he did not vote for President Trump, barely mentioned Trump. I don't think he ever mentioned Trump this weekend. While the other, the more populist, more conservative candidate, Travis Allen, was mentioning Trump every 5 seconds. And you saw this up and down, I think, in terms of the state party officials. There wasn't a lot of pushing President Trump at this convention, but they were certainly selling a lot of MAGA shirts and buttons and hats and so forth to the grassroots activists who tend to show up at these things. I think, you know, Christine is exactly right. Their strategy is to talk about California, and I think they have some get some traction on this as a broken state, a state that is now sort of hobbled with homeless encampments, gridlock on it with infrastructure, taxes, high taxes that are driving businesses out. But whether enough voters are going to feel that and want to go Republican for the 2018 election, that's the question.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that we looked at again in our last episode was this focus by some Republicans, and specifically I was looking at Rocky Chavez and the Daryl Issa race representing kind of the strain of that they're calling themselves New Way Republicans, right? This is the Chad Mays group that's backed by Arnold Schwarzenegger. Did they have any presence at the convention? Was there any talk by them or any of their message there?
I didn't see any, and I think that's another example of you know, the party kind of splitting up and you're not seeing these factions. A lot of the most well-known never Trumpers in the party, you know, strategist Rob Stutzman is a good example. Mike Madrid, I didn't see him there. These folks are well-known, well-respected, and longtime operatives in the party. And yet, you know, their attention and their connection with the party now seems to be just not there.
I would add, too, that, I mean, not only is Carla right that the never Trumpers kind of have, I think, reacted by just not really showing up to these things anymore. Like, they don't have a visible vocal presence in terms of dissenting with, you know, the president of the United States. But that being said, even the people who had eventually embraced Donald Trump as the nominee of the Republican Party and the president, you know, folks like Mimi Walters got up and said in her speech that Donald Trump was not her first choice to be the standard bearer of the Republican Party, that she had campaigned for two other candidates before she kind of saw what the power of Donald Trump was in the 2016 campaign. And RNC committee man Sean Steele said to me in an interview, listed all of the different, you know, Republican candidates in the 2016 primary that he had supported as well. So I feel like even the people who are leading the party, who show up to the convention and are taking the charge in terms of trying to steer the party in the midterm election are being more open about not being 100% behind Trump at the time now. Whereas when you saw these convention goers last year, it was just euphoric coming off of the Trump win and just, you know, Trump scarves, Trump hats. It was just like a big party. And I think this time there was a lot more muted. And you can see that bear out in the fact that Trump's approval ratings are hovering below a third of California voters at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to hang over the entire election. I think every ad we see from Democrats, every attack ad is going to have the word Trump as much as possible in it. Listen, thank you both for joining us for our first roundtable here on the Keys to the House podcast from Capital Public Radio. That's Christine Myduk, political reporter with the LA Times, and Carla Marinucci, senior writer with Politico's California Playbook. Thanks both of you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for having me.
This is Keys to the House. We're off next week, but back with a new reporter roundtable after that. We'll start diving into more individual races that could determine the election, including another longtime congressman stepping down in Orange County, or the embattled congressman who won't, the one with all the ties to Russia. Our podcast is produced by Sally Schilling and edited by Nick Miller. Chris Hagen is our digital editor, and the executive producer is Linnea Edmeyer. Big thanks to my brother, Matt Bradford, for composing our theme song and music. If you're looking for more California political coverage, check out California's Next Governor. My colleague Ben Adler has interviewed every major candidate who's vying to replace Jerry Brown. You'll find it at capradio.org/podcasts, on iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. Stay up to date on all of your news, elections, and otherwise by tuning into Capital Public Radio, going online to capradio.org, or following us on Twitter at @CapRadioNews. This is Keys to the House. I'm your host, Ben Bradford. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.